Welcome to the JIMD podcast, a fortnightly podcast from the Journal of Inherited Metabolic Disease. Whilst I've got you, I wonder if I could just ask a little favour. I'm currently collecting some audience feedback and it'd be great if you could click the link in the podcast description and answer 11 very brief questions. And then listen to this latest podcast on BH4 in tyrosine hydroxylase deficiency. Now, I suspect you're a little tired of hearing this, but it continues to surprise me that almost 4 years into the podcast, we continue to find new disorders to discuss. And what really tickles me about this paper we're featuring today is that it manages to bring together a therapy that I think many in the IMD world are pretty familiar with, and a disorder that perhaps we don't hear enough about. This paper is a Norwegian-Spanish collaboration, and I'm delighted to be joined by the joint co-leads of the paper, Tetrahydrobiopterin Treatment Stabilizes Tyrosine Hydroxylase, Rescue of Tyrosine Hydroxylase Deficiency Phenotypes in Human Neurons and in a Knock-In Mouse Model. And those authors are Dr. Kua Jung KC of the Department of Biomedicine at the University of Bergen and Dr. Alba Tristan Noguero of the Department of Genetics at the University of Barcelona. Alba and Kua, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So tyrosine hydroxylase deficiency is a new topic for the podcast, and it's an IMD I've no experience of. Would you be happy to give me a brief primer on the condition?
Sure, I can take it. Tyrosine hydroxylase deficiency, in short THD, is a rare genetic disease caused by mutation in the TH gene, leading to catecholamine deficiency, such as dopamine, epinephrine, and norepinephrine. Up to now, 59 different disease-causing variants have been identified in the TH gene, most of which is missense mutation, meaning a change in single nucleotide can result in a codon that codes for a completely different amino acid, which mostly affects enzymes' activity, stability, solubility, leading to accelerated degradation, and hence catecholamine deficiency, which is followed by complex pathophysiology and heterogeneity in phenotype. THD has a broad phenotypic spectrum ranging from mild to severe to very severe. And classically, it has been categorized into two types, type A and type B. Type A being progressive, hypokinetic, rigid syndrome with dystonia and often responds well to L-DOPA treatment, whereas type B being complex neonatal Parkinsonism with severe encephalopathy, which does not respond very well to L-DOPA treatment. However, the classification is a bit redundant now because there is overlap of the symptom and it's very hard to draw genotype to phenotype correlation due to heterogeneity.
And the same mutation can be responsive or non-responsive to the treatment, or can have a more severe or a more non-severe phenotype. Yeah, in fact, I think it was in the paper from Williamson et al., published in Brain in 2010. I think there were 9 patients with this mutation, and there were 6 that were like type A, responsive and mild or moderate, and then 3 that were non-responsive and severe. So already in patients, it has been described in the literature that there are patients with this mutation that can be responsive or non-responsive to a treatment, or mild or severe.
And do both of those types present in the neonatal period, or will some of them become more apparent later on?
Depending on the severity of the mutation, some of the variants present at neonatal period, whereas some in early childhood.
Okay. It's always kind of useful because these are things that I literally have never seen, but I've always wanted to think rare, as I try and encourage my listeners to do. And as it stands, you mentioned L-DOPA as a treatment. Is that it as far as treatment's concerned?
Well, yeah, the usual treatment that is given to these patients is L-DOPA plus carbidopa. But as Kumar say, there are some patients that doesn't respond to this treatment, or they just respond partially. But also the problem is that they could have like different secondary effects, like as dyskinesias. So it's kind of complicated to control the dose.
So clearly there's an unmet need. Mm-hmm. I mean, this work utilizes 2 different disease models. I'm always fascinated by the different approaches we take to sort of trying to recapitulate IMDs. Could you briefly talk me through the ones you were working with here?
Yes. So prior to discussing the models, there's something that is essential to clarify. Human TH exists in 4 isoforms, namely isoform 1, 2, 3, and 4. Isoform 1 is predominantly expressed in the brain and is the one that is studied the most. The variations among isoforms lie in their amino acid lengths. Isoform 1 has 497 amino acids. Isoform 2 has 4 additional amino acids. Isoform 3 has 27 additional amino acids, and isoform 4, which is the longest one, has both 27 plus 4 amino acids. So typically, THD variants are presented by using the numeration of the longest isoform of TH, but on PND database, the numeration for isoform 1 is used. So there can be a bit of confusion, and we've used both numerations in our paper. Now, coming back to models, in our lab in Bergen, we used a TH knock-in mouse harboring a prevalent TSD variant carrying a mutation R203H, that is arginine at position 203, is substituted with histidine. And that corresponds to the mutation R202H in human TH isoform 1. And if we use the numeration for the longest isoform, it is R233H. The mouse exhibit progressive catecholamine depletion and severe motor impairment and does not respond to L-DOPA treatment.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, in our lab, well, in fact, this work has been done in collaboration with two laboratories, one in DBA, led by Professor Consiglio, and the other in San Joan d'Adeu, both in Barcelona, led by Ens García Cazorla. So what we started in a collaboration like 6 or 7 years ago was to perform a new model based on induced pluripotent stem cells. So what we did was to perform skin biopsies from two patients of THD, one that was heterozygous component of two different mutations or variants that had the phenotype B because it was a severe clinical manifestation and it was not responsive to the treatment, to L-DOPA plus carbidopa. And then we had another patient that was a type A phenotype that was an homozygous for mutation R233H, which was responsive already to L-DOPA plus carbidopa. And so we got this and we obtained this IPS and then were differentiated to dopaminergic neurons. So after some experiments, we were able to find a phenotype related with the disorder with THD, and we could work on that and try to test different treatments to see if in this case the non-responsive was responsive or the other way.
And obviously this meant that you guys were working in iPSCs and the mouse model that essentially had the same change given all this you've explained about the isoforms.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's why it was important to kind of clarify that, you know, the numeration's a bit confusing because, you know, we have different isoform of TH only in humans and then in mice it's just one and the length is different as well. Yeah.
Well, I'm grateful that you have clarified it because, you know, all of this is just flying over my head and that's why I bring in experts. When it comes to testing those different treatments, obviously BH4 is one that we're going to talk about today. I presume that was used because you suspected it would work rather than you were kind of throwing everything at the wall and seeing what stuck. There was a scientific reason to use this, I take it.
Yes, BH4 is the cofactor of TH, and it is essential to convert L-tyrosine into L-DOPA, and then that is converted into dopamine and other catecholamines. In addition, previous studies have shown that BH4 exhibits chaperone-like activity on TH. And also, we perform in vitro assays to investigate thermal stabilization of TH in the presence of BH4, and we observed that TH was more stable in the presence of BH4.
Well, sorry, but before that, we were spending like 3 or 4 years collaborating, no, with Aurora and also with Coomber. We tested, I think it was 1, 2, like 6 different pharmacochaperones or pharmacochaperones like. So in your lab, Coomber, in Norway, they were already doing some screening. But then when we had it in our hands and we tested with the cell model, we had to discard at least 4 of them until we got to BH4 and we saw that there was a response. And then we went to the in vivo model with the mice model. So obviously it's not like you have one hit or one idea, you test it and it works perfectly fine at the first time. So hopefully could be like that, but usually it's not like that, no? And you have to test different things.
Yes, no, I wouldn't want to trivialize the time that the research takes. And yes, it would certainly be easier to start at the end than it is to start at the beginning. So having discarded these other candidates, you found this potential candidate. Does it work?
Yes.
Yeah, and it works super clearly already from the first trial that we did. The cell culture was more mature or more healthy, we could say. So at the level of the immunohistochemistry images that we do to assess if it's improved, but also to see how many cells do we have there. So just to assess how is the cell culture, we already could observe that we had more TH positive neurons. So there were more expressive neurons, and also they were expressing more TH protein as it was assessed by Westerblot studies. And then the last thing that we checked was to observe if this tyrosine hydroxylase enzyme was also functional, which means these cell cultures were able to generate or to produce more dopamine. And we measured this intracellularly with an ELISA kit to assess the levels of dopamine in the cell culture. And we also observed that. So at the end, we had more TH-positive neurons, more TH protein expression, and more enzymatic activity, but only in THDA-derived dopaminergic neurons, not in the ones derived from the THDB.
And were your mice also improved, given they had this common variant, as you'd said?
Yes, we observed improved motor outcomes, actually, because previous studies that characterized some of the mice has been done in our group before. And the knock-in mice exhibit, just to make this a bit easy to understand, type B type of phenotypes, which is non-responsive to L-DOPA treatment, right, in addition to hampered motor conditions. But upon treatment with BH4, the motor outcomes were significantly improved. We performed a rotor rod test, which is basically we put mice on a rotating rod and we just measured how long they can hang on to the rod. It was significantly improved. They could stay on the rotating rod for longer upon treatment with BH4. So that was a significant improvement. And also knock-in, we call it THI-KI because it's like TH knock-in mice. They exhibit catalepsy behavior. Upon treatment with BH4, we saw significantly improved, let's call it, they were not as cataleptic. So it was a significant improvement upon BH4 treatment, and we were really happy to see the results.
I'm not sure there's any drug that could help me stay on a rotating rod, but it's different measures, I suppose. The doses that you talk about within the paper are much bigger than those that people are perhaps familiar with that we're seeing in PKU, which is where BH4 is kind of now in fairly mainstream use. Was that to be expected?
Yes, that's a good point. Actually, yes, it is expected because it has been already shown in a previous study that we need to administer higher dose of BH4 for it to cross blood-brain barrier. Since PKU is in the liver, you don't need very high dose of BH4 to reach a certain level of BH4 in the liver. Whereas in order for BH4 to accumulate at an effective level, we need to administer a higher dose of BH4, and it's safe. It's been shown before that it is safe to give 100 mg per kilo per day of BH4.
And one of the limitations of BH4 within PKU is that we only really see a meaningful benefit in less than half of our PKU patients. And those with the most severe forms of the disease are the least likely to benefit. Would you expect a similar response rate in tyrosine hydroxylase deficiency?
Yes, I would think so. And we've also shown on this paper that only one type responded to BH4 treatment in the cells, for example, with R233H mutation, whereas the other one, the one with the compound heterozygous mutation, with two different mutations, did not respond very well to BH4 treatment. So that's an example of non-responsive to BH4 treatment. And that is expected because, like I mentioned before, BH4 physically stabilizes the protein, but sometimes due to the severity of the mutation, it affects the stability and solubility of the protein, and then it gets degraded quite fast in the cells, which means the chaperone, or in this case, BH4, will not be able to somehow correct the structure of the protein, which is, again, affected by the mutation itself. And hence, the enzyme will not be able to impart its function.
I mean, it's disappointing that it doesn't work for everyone, but it's, I suppose you've got one more option than we had at the start of the podcast. So given that this is a drug that's already approved for use in another metabolic disorder, albeit at a very different dose, could human trials be on the horizon?
I hope so.
I think BH4 is really promising because it's a natural cofactor of the enzyme, right? So it does not pose any side effect, so to speak, or not debilitating side effect, at least. And it's a very specific type of stabilization. So like, say, for example, other phenotypic drug screening that's been done, we just look at the phenotypic outcome of the drug, not necessarily knowing what the target is. But in this case, it's a specific target, so to speak, because we know that it binds to the enzyme and not something else in the cell, which indirectly kind of improves the level or availability of the enzyme in the cells. It's very specific. So it's very promising in that sense. But then again, we should always be open for combining two therapies. One is, say, for example, a cofactor. And in addition, if we can find another pharmacological chaperone, like a small molecule that can improve the stabilization in combination to BH4 would be ideal.
In fact, apart from small molecules, we were also discussing all this time, like in different meetings, that it would be interesting to do a coadjuvant treatment with L-DOPA and BH4. And this could be promising, so we should try it also, maybe in the cells and see in the mice if we could also observe a better response.
Well, I hope I haven't put you off the idea of podcasting so much that you won't be afraid to come back and tell me about that when you get that work done. And then all that remains is for me to encourage interested listeners to find the paper via the link in the podcast description or by going to the journal webpage and searching for tyrosine hydroxylase and BH4. Gunwa and Alba, thank you for making the time to speak with me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.